I don't know about you, but I often find myself at the end of a week rummaging around in the fridge, and I usually find at least one wilted bag of spinach or a very sad-looking cucumber. And I do feel guilty about that. I mean, if it's really unusable, the only thing you can do is throw it out. But you will be relieved to know that this isn't just a problem that you and I have to deal with, or maybe just those of us who are particularly disorganized. It's also something that industry is wrestling with, the facilities where your food is made in the first place. There's a huge amount of waste being created there too, and there's apparently a pretty big opportunity being missed here, and it is futuristic stuff. Well, maybe it's not. Maybe it's happening right now. Let's find out with Dr. Annalyn Patayachi. She's the food and nutrition doctor and author, scientist and nutritionist. Good morning.
Good morning.
What sort of waste are we talking about here?
Ah, okay. Well, fruit and veggie, I mean, food waste happens across every single sector. It is true that a lot of food waste happens in the consumer and the retail end of the spectrum, purely because shelf life, how we look at things, that sort of stuff. But then, yeah, there is food waste generated in the food processing side of things. You have to realize, though, producers and farmers, they don't want to waste. And it's unfortunate when drought or hail or rain or insects get in the way, that causes food waste for them.
Oh, so how does that create waste?
Well, if you've got hail damage, you can't really harvest it and sell it for human consumption. Mm. If there's too many insects going through your spinach and or your lettuce leaves, well, then again, can't really sell it for consumption again. So those sort of things, is they don't have control over. They try to minimize it, and their best interest is to not have food waste. So they're pretty good, and they're still trying to efficiently optimize that process. Then you've got the processors. And again, for them, they don't want to generate waste because that's dollars down the drain. But you do have waste generated in things like, say, juicing or pureeing. When we're making a transformed, otherwise known as processed food, there's nothing wrong with processing. It just depends on how processed it is and what is in it, rather than the actual technology. So if we're taking, say, foods that are juiced, the waste that is generated can be anywhere between 30 to 50%, depending on the fruit or vegetable.
Right, and there's no pathway at the moment for that to go somewhere else.
Usually it's repurposed into pig feed.
That is a pathway.
That is a pathway, that's right. They'll eat anything. But that sort of pulp that's generated from that processing can actually be used for other products.
Right. So what? Where does this stuff normally go if it's not pig feed? Is it just into the bin, into landfill? Or?
Yeah, into landfill, but most of it will end up in, feeding for the animal food sector.
Okay, so it kind of goes somewhere, but you're thinking that it could go somewhere better.
It could go somewhere with a higher value proposition in terms for industry, and it could go somewhere better because it is really high in nutritive value. So I don't call it waste. I call it processing byproduct. Mm. So if you think about it a bit differently, it's not waste anymore. So this is just the pulp, the skins, the stuff that doesn't end up in the juice bottle, basically, or purees. That waste, that fibrousy material, that is actually really high in things called polyphenols. So polyphenols they have a range of different activities. They can be antioxidant, anti-carcinogenic, so fighting against cancer cells, anti-mutagenic, so fighting against DNA damage. But they work at the cellular level, and it is based on a dose. But these compounds are naturally present in all fruits and vegetables. They are located within the plant cell. And surrounding that cell is dietary fiber or the plant cell wall. So when we process or we chew it up in our mouth and make a juice, we open those cells and these things can come out in that juicy liquid phase. But sometimes, or a lot of the time, some of these compounds actually get stuck onto that dietary fiber, which is then discarded. So what we've been looking at and the research shows is that this fibrousy byproduct has a lot of these highly nutritive compounds in it. And we can take that fibrousy material and process it and make it into a value-added ingredient to use in other products.
So we'll talk about what might be possible there in just a moment. But on this sort of fibrousy material that we're talking about, I can imagine it probably doesn't look very appealing when it's sitting there in the facility or something like that. Is it damaged in any way, or is it considered, dirty when it's at that stage before it gets reused?
No. So think about in the most rudimentary thing, You got a juicer at home, or you got a Boost Juice and you get a fresh juice made. You got the orange carrot juice that comes out in your glass, and you got all this orange pulp that's usually thrown out. Or if you want and you're really trendy and hipster, you can put on a flat baking tray and bake it at 45 degrees and make carrot crackers or something. But that, you can still eat it. Like, if you ate a whole carrot, you'd actually be eating that. It's just that we're processing and we're separating the liquid from the solid material. And that solid material is quite often, you know, discarded into animal feed.
Dr. Annalyn Patiacci is our guest this morning on Breakfast on ABC Radio Perth and WA. What sort of opportunities have you got in mind for reusing this material?
One thing that a lot of people don't realise is that food manufacture is a huge contributor to our GDP in Australia. So when we think about the biggest contributor to the economy is the mining sector, and being here in Western Australia, that's a big thing. 8.6%, I think it is mining's contribution to GDP. The next level down from that is manufacturing. And in Australia, we don't actually manufacture a whole lot of stuff. What we do manufacture a lot of, though, is food. And so the food and the agriculture component together, food manufactured foods and agriculture combined, is roughly about 5.5% contribution to GDP. So we're talking about a lot of potential here. So we don't just eat the food that we make, we export a lot of it as well. So we're looking at it from an economical perspective. There is a lot of potential there. In terms of the type of products that you can use this byproduct waste in, we're talking about, you know, adding high fiber, antioxidant, polyphenol-rich fiber to things like sausages and rissoles and burger patties as a binder instead of starches, which don't have much nutritive value at all. So we can actually increase the dietary fiber content in a burger patty.
You're telling me you can make sausages healthier?
Healthier,
this is genius.
yes, to a certain extent, yes, we can improve that, hiding vegetables in it. Other foods could be like 3D printed foods, which has got a really niche but a really high value proposition.
So this blows my mind. Talk to me about 3D printed foods and how do you turn that stuff on the factory floor into a 3D printed food?
So if you get the fibrous, just think about your carrot juice that you've done at home and you have all this orange fibery stuff. If I take that fibrous material, we can process it to make it into a powder. We're basically just drying it and crushing it down into tiny little particles. We can reconstitute that. So just adding water, and then you actually end up with a different type of paste material. And this, you know, different types of foods have different viscosities, and that's really important to work it out. A 3D printer is pretty much exactly what I'm saying. And you've probably seen 3D printers for doing plastic ornaments and things like that. You can do it with food as well. The printer is pretty straightforward. It's the ink that is high value. So that ink could be a pure carrot-based pulp. It could be chocolate. It could be a meat-based substrate. And then it's printed into either the shape of carrots or lizards or your cat's face or whatever it is, but in a 3D shape. And the reason, like, those sort of things are quite novel, but where this high value proposition is in certain population groups. So say, for example, the elderly in old age homes who have dysphagia. So dysphagia is they can't swallow, so they can't, or they can't chew. And if they swallow, it can end up in their lungs, which could potentially lead to a fatality. One of the last things to go is our taste sensations. And unfortunately for people who've got dysphagia or swallowing and chewing difficulty, they are forced to eat food that basically looks like slop on a plate. And when it doesn't look recognizable, it doesn't look appetizing, a lot of these elderly people don't want to eat. So if you can't get them to eat, then you can't get the nutrition into them. And that just exacerbates their health issues. In the Netherlands, they actually do a lot of 3D printing in old age homes where they will print a chicken breast fillet or carrots or peas or roast potatoes using a potato-based ink, a carrot-based ink, a chicken protein-based ink, but it looks like a chicken breast fillet. So it's still soft and it's mushy, but the thing is it actually looks like food that they recognize.
Have you ever tasted 3D printed food?
I have not tasted. Oh, have I? Yeah, I have actually. I've tasted a 3D printed carrot.
I'm trying to imagine what it would taste like. It would be like, it's very Heston Blumenthal in my mind, you know, like something that looks like a carrot and is made of carrot but isn't one.
Well, yeah. In the case of the one I tasted, it was 3D printed into the shape of a lizard. So it was an orange lizard. I don't actually like reptiles, so that was a bit hard for me to try it. But, I mean, if they wanted to, they could have done it in the shape of a carrot. But it just tastes like carrot. That's all.
Yeah, and I guess like soft. You would mash up a carrot or grate it or do whatever.
Yeah, pureed carrot. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And how expensive would this sort of thing be to do? I mean, I'm thinking people might think this is a great idea, but practically speaking, from the business side of thing and also the consumer, to make this idea, you know, to spread it far and wide, how difficult would that be?
There's a few different things that we've got to look at. Firstly, it's the scalability and how much of this byproduct waste material do we generate? We know that we generate a lot of this stuff. If 30% of an apple actually ends up not in the bottle, that's a lot of apples when it comes to apple juice, forgetting about all the other fruit and veggies that are juiced. So we know we generate a lot of it and we constantly are generating a lot of it. So that's problem solved in that regard. The next thing is to look at is how much, what's the usability? So for me, I think there is a niche for, and I think there's a really good space for 3D printed foods for specialized populations, like the elderly who have dysphagia. And you got to realize Australia, like most of the developed world, is an aging population. So we've got two types of old people. My parents are one of them. They're the active ages who have an active life. They travel, they do all this sort of stuff. They don't want to get a chronic health disease. So they're very fixated on their health. And then you've got the older olds who just don't seem to die. And I mean that in a nice way. They just stay around for a very long time. They can't swallow, they can't chew, but they're just going and going and going. And that population is actually getting bigger as we become an aging population. So we've got a whole lot of consumers who are ready to go, who aren't going anywhere for a long time, and they need this type of supplemented food product. So I'm not just talking about plain carrot, but we could add nutrients and other vitamins and minerals to this carrot pulp to make a highly nutritive carrot, 3D carrot. So you got them. The technology isn't that hard to scale, considering 3D printing is just really quite efficiently produced at the moment, especially for all of the little plastic gadgets. It's more about the fact, who wants to put your hand up and actually start doing it? So in the Netherlands, it's actually commercial. They're doing it over there. I think there's something between 6 to 10 old age homes that have these machines in there. And there is one company, it was one company, I think 2 years ago, that was actually making the inks for them. And that's all they did. And so they want to roll that across all their old age homes. So if we're going to think about it here in Australia, can we do it? Definitely. Do we have the ingredients? Yes. Do we have the technical capabilities and the research? Yes. CSIRO is playing in this space. There's a lot of universities that are playing in this space and doing the research behind it. Do we have a population that can use it? For sure. It's just now about rethinking what is waste. And that's half the problem, is that we still think this is waste when it's actually a high value byproduct that could be used somewhere else.
Change of thinking is required. Yeah. It is a fascinating area. Thank you so much for telling us about it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Dr. Adeline Padayachi, the food and nutrition doctor. She's an author, scientist, and nutritionist.